sahana bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai om shanti 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 hari om. We are discussing the Maitreyi Brahmana, a beautiful dialogue between Yajnavalkya and Maitreyi. And the story goes so far, Yajnavalkya wanted to renounce the world and he offered his wealth to in equal parts to both of his wives. One wife accepted it, the other wife wanted to follow the path of her husband and he appreciates that fact. So he says, Saho vacha yajnavalkyaha priya bata arena sati priyam bhashase ehi asva vyakhyasyamite vyachakshanasya tu me nidithyaya sasveti. Beautiful wordings. Yajnavalkya said, Oh my dear, you have always been dear to me, my beloved, and now you say what you say is much more dearer to my heart. Come, sit down, I shall explain it to you. And while I explain it, concentrate upon it. You know, any wife who is in harmony with her husband will be dear to that husband. And if the husband is trying to lead a higher type of life and the wife also follows that type of life, then she comes even more closer to him. What does it mean? It's not in a... Previously what existed was worldly love, worldly bond, worldly harmony. But now what comes is, he was going to be spiritual. She was also going to be spiritual. So what is the nature of spirituality? To make two into one. You know, the Jivatma becomes one with Paramatma. Or in other words, you know, our self becomes the self of all. And the self of all becomes our self. So here, the differentiation of husband and wife, student and teacher, all these will disappear. In that sense, she cannot be any more closer to him in spiritual life, because she becomes he, she and he, that distinction completely vanishes. But even as a student, she has become so dear because she wants to follow her husband. So Yajnavalkya appreciates, but not as a husband. As a wife, she was very dear to her husband. But now she is very dear as a student to a guru, the teacher. Teacher and student relationship. This is the story so far we have gone. Now the teaching starts. But before the teaching starts, we have to understand it a little bit more. Now, the scriptures tell us that for any teacher, he must fulfill certain conditions. So there are three such main conditions. And he must first be Shrotriya, means he must know the spirit of the scripture. Shrotriya means that Shruti must be in his blood. Not as a pandit, but as an understanding, one who understands. Second, he must be a Brahmanishtha, Brahma Parayana. He must also realize the truth of the scriptures. Thirdly, Akamahataha. He should not have any kind of subtle or unconscious motivation for being a teacher. Why? because the real teacher is only God. And anybody who thinks I am a teacher, that I to that extent becomes an obstruction. So the teacher only can manifest when there is no obstruction.
Maharaj, I had a question.
Hmm.
If a teacher is Brahmanishta, that means he has realized the truth,
yeah.
How can he have karma?
Right. So, what we have to understand is that the scriptures are not only indicating what should be an ideal situation, it also describes what is a practical situation. A person is very sincere, he is almost half the way or one-fourth of the way, and still he may have some hidden desires. That is why he is telling that he should not expect from the student any benefit excepting the wish that the student must progress in spiritual life. You know, this is the ideal situation. Where will you get in this world ideal situation? So similarly, the student also must have three qualifications. First of all, he must be sadhana chatushtaya sampanna. He must have certain prerequisite qualifications should be there. Secondly, he should be utterly devoted to the teaching only. And lastly, he should have infinite patience, and whatever be the setbacks, he should never stop. That is the qualification, best qualification of a student. Any number of times he may fail, but he should not stop on no account. So these are the qualifications required of the student. Only when these two conditions are fulfilled, then the teaching is not a teaching. It is a transmission of knowledge. It takes place. So here we assume these conditions are completely fulfilled. Now the teaching starts. The teaching is about what is called our usual experience, love. It's a beautiful word, love, or bhakti. In theological language, it is called bhakti. In ordinary human language, we use the word love without understanding what it really means. Let me read out and then we will proceed. Saho vacha, nava are patyuh kamaya patih priyo bhavati. Atmanastu kamaya patih priyo bhavati. Nava are jayaye kamaya jaya priya bhavati. Atmanastu kamaya jaya priya bhavati. Nava are putranam kamaya putraha priya bhavanti. Atmanastu kamaya putraha priya bhavanti. Nava are vittasya kamaya vittam priyam bhavati. Atmanastu kamaya vittam priyam bhavati. Nava are brahmana kamaya brahma priyam bhavati. Atmanastu kamaya brahma priyam bhavati. Nava are kshatrasya kamaya kshatram priyam bhavati. Atmanastu kamaya kshatram priyam bhavati. Nava are lokanam kamaya loka priya bhavanti. Atmanastu kamaya loka priya bhavanti. Nava are devanam kamaya devaha priya bhavanti. Atmanastu kamaya devaha priya bhavanti. Nava are bhutanam kamaya bhutani priyani bhavanti. Atmanastu kamaya bhutani priyani bhavanti. Nava are sarvasya kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. Atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. Atma va are drashtavya shrotavyo mantavyo nididhyasitavyo maitreyi. Atmano va are darshanena shravanena matya vijnanena idam sarvam viditam, in brackets, bhavati. This is one of the most famous passages in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Let me read out the translation. Yajnavalkya, addressing his wife, said, "Verily, the husband is dear to the wife, not for the sake of the husband, but for her own sake that he is dear. Verily, the wife is dear to the husband, not for the sake of the wife, but for his own sake that she is dear. where really sons are dear, etc., etc., you know. Then wealth is dear, then Brahmana is dear, Kshatriya is dear, all the worlds are dear, gods are dear, and all beings are dear, when everything that we experience in this creation is dear, not for the sake of the creation, but for the sake of one's own self. This is first part of the passage. The next part is, this self, my dear Maitreyi, should verily be realized. That is the goal. The third part of this is, the self should be heard of, reflected on, and meditated upon. This is the third. The fourth one is, by the realization of the self alone, my dear, through the process of hearing, reflection, and meditation, all this is known. All this is known. What is this? The teaching that I am giving you can be understood only by the realization of the self. Otherwise, it is not understandable. So why is he giving this teaching? For the sake of Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. What is the goal of Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana? Hearing and reflecting and meditating upon it for the realization of the self. So what is the essence? Realization of the self is the goal, and the way to attain to that goal is by hearing and reflecting and meditating upon that truth until there is no meditator and there is no separate truth. They become one and the same. And then let us take first sentence. The rest is only a repetition. That no wife loves her husband for his sake, but loves the husband for her own sake, or for the sake of the self. Atmanah kamaya. For the sake of the self. What do you mean by there is a smaller self? There is a bigger self. Both are meaningful to us, even from our ordinary worldly experience. But before going, I would like to add something. That you see, this also is considered as a preparation for sannyasa. The whole previous story is that one must become a sannyasi. Again, do not mistake, sannyasa can be two types. The external plus internal, but only internal. For householders, it is the internal, and for the sannyasins, both internal and external. So what is sannyasa? Sannyasa is not simply a kind of special type of life. What is sannyasa? I had enough of these worldly experiences. I do not desire any of them. They pall on me. I want spiritual life. When a person enters this state, that is called the third state of devotion in the Bhagavad Gita. Artha, Artharthi, Jignasu, Jignasa. Jignasa is not what is called curiosity mongering. Intense yearning. Like, you know, if a man's head has caught fire, he is running towards the water like mad. So, if you offer $1 billion, will he stop and shake hands with you? He won't. Even if God comes and says, I am God, he will push him aside and say, you wait, I will first go and put off the fire, then I may consider talking to you. This is what is called Tibra Vairagya, intense renunciation. We assume from this story, until this stage is reached, Shravana will not bear any significance. It doesn't have any influence. We can hear hundreds of times. But it is only when the person is having this state of mind that Shravana turns into Manana and Nididhyasana. The example, Saint Paul, or Saint Thomas, the first desert monk, So he was a young man. He used to go to the church. Many times he heard the word, and go back to your home, sell all your property, distribute it to the poor, and take up the cross and follow me. He heard many times this sermon. But there came a period, the moment he heard this, went home, sold off all his property, and took up the cross. He went into the Egyptian desert, and he never came out until he realized. The second example would be Lala Baba. He heard, Baba, anek bela hoiche, when are you going to clean your clothes? There was a washerman, he had a daughter, and Lala Baba was a jemindar. He was going in the afternoon, and the washerman was supposed to have washed before noon and kept the cloths for drying. Baba anek bela hoise bhashana kobe pudabe. There is a double meaning there. Bhashana means samskaras, worldly samskaras. When are you going to burn them? The daughter is meaning, when are you going to clean the dirty cloths? But the jemindar understood, when are you going to burn your vasanas? He might have heard that sentence many times, but that particular afternoon, somehow it has gone deep inside. Immediately, then and there, he announced the word and went back. So that is assumed here. Now coming back, it is very ordinary experience. A wife, a loving wife, loves her husband. A loving husband loves his wife. And parents love the children, children love the parents. We love our friends, our country, our religion, race, this, that, whatever. We love our money, we love our food, we love our clothes, whatever be the love. What is the meaning of love? When a person issues the statement that I love this, so who is in the superior position? The object, the loved object. You see, I love you means I am prepared to do anything for you. But unfortunately, tragically, the meaning is totally different. It means, so long as you suit my purposes, I love you. This is the truth. If whether you want it, wish it or not, this is the truth. When a wife, Thakur used to say, a husband is dying and the wife is shouting at him. You are going so nicely. What have you left for me? She is not worried about him. She is only worried. Similarly, when a wife is dying, this fellow is, sobbing his heart out. Who is going to cook and clean? She is not worried about him, or he is not worried about her. This is the truth. You see, why is it so? Now, what is the nature of love? The nature of love is self-love. The nature of love is everything for my sake. There is nothing called unconditional love in this world, excepting for the self, for one's own self. So why is it? First of all, this self-love has three conditions. What are those? First of all, it is inborn. We don't learn to love ourselves. We don't go to a school. We will teach you how to love you for so much of fee. From the very birth, we only love ourselves. It is inborn. Secondly, it is universal. It is not that I alone love myself. Everybody, young or old, rich or poor, animal or human or birds, everything in this world loves its own self. This is the truth. Thirdly, this love, which is within us, is absolutely unconditional. We don't put any condition that if I am like this and like this, then only I will love myself. What is the nature of worldly love? Just the opposite. You see, nobody starts loving anything. They have to be taught. The baby also has to be taught. You know, if you don't love your mother, she is not going to feed you, take care of you. Yes. Secondly, it is not universal. In the sense, if one person loves one thing, that others also would love the same thing, there is no such rule. In fact, one person's meat is another person's poison. Thirdly, any love of others for ourselves or our love for the world is absolutely conditional. Conditional means what? I will love you only when you fulfill these conditions. The moment those conditions are not fulfilled, that love takes a legal divorce then and there. No, sorry, not legal divorce, illegal divorce, immediate divorce. Yes? Take an example, a food, you love some food. Why you are eating? Why are you, I love this food. Like, you know, Global Vedanta, there was one beautiful cartoon. A fox was holding the neck of a duck and saying, I love you the most in this world. Beautiful cartoon. You know, conditions, how long do we love anything? So long as it is, suits my comfort, my happiness. The moment it stops giving, we don't love. We may live together, we may accept, but love disappears. Have you not noticed? Husband and wife, they don't love each other any longer. But for whatever reason, tradition, society, necessity, whatever reason, they live to continue to live together. But there is no love any longer. Between friends, between nations, between any man and any material, between any two living creatures, this is the condition. So you see, that is the nature of worldly love. But this love for oneself is inborn. It is universal, it is unconditional in the sense, when I am young, I love myself. When I am old, I no longer love myself. Have you come across any person, any creature? Every creature loves itself. This is the first point we have to learn about love. There are two types of love, self-love and other love. Self-love is inborn, universal, unconditional. Other love is to be learned with great difficulty, and it is not universal. Universal in the sense, if I love something, that something somebody may not love me. Mm. Including food. I love some foods, but those foods do not love me. Secondly, it's all time bound. What we love, others need not love it. In fact, they may hate. Thirdly, it's all conditional. As long as it suits me. But love for myself is absolutely unconditional. It is universal. It is inborn. And every life, it continues without the least break. Because even when this physical body dies, we have a subtle body. We love. So worldly love is just the opposite. This is the stark truth, if you want to know. Fine. The next point we have to understand is, yes, we do love, we do learn to love, we do love, and we also might even love with less conditions. But what is it that we are loving? Just analyze a little bit. Take an example. Here is a person. I will give two examples. Here is a person. He loves a kind of food, sweet food, let us say. Now, what is it that he loves in this sweet food? Is it the sweetness? Is it the nama? Is it the rupa?
No.
It is the guna.
Yeah, the sweetness. Yeah.
Here is a man who loves a woman and vice versa. So he says, you are, I love you. What is it he loves in her? Is it the name?
Her nature.
Is it the body?
No.
No man, no woman is ever found to love this, what Swami Vivekananda called, dead molecules. The body is nothing but dead molecules. But there is something inside which manifests in the form of good gunas, positive qualities. And the one of the most positive quality of all these qualities, or the essence of all good qualities, is called love. I will come this third point very quickly. But you know, somebody can cook well, that's a quality. Some people is very, you know, what you call loving behavior. So, and some people appreciate me. So it is not the body. It is not the what you call beauty. You can call it beauty. But even physical beauty, if somebody loves, it doesn't last long. Because this physical beauty, is its condition is dependent upon the condition of the body. If the body becomes sick, but some people, in spite of, you know, the partner becoming sick, old, deformed, anything, they will love. Then what is it they are loving? Their love is not based upon the physical condition of the body. If you know, rupa. No, it is not the body. There is some guna which is expressing through them, through their eyes, through their expression, through their attitude. That guna. Not nama, not rupa, but guna. What is this guna? Quality. What is this quality? Where from does it spring? It springs only from one source, and that is called
self.
Now what is this quality that springs from the self? This is the third point we have to understand. Let us say here is a beautiful person. Here is a very good person. Naturally, there is love. We say it is love. And we also have understood this good quality is only an expression of the person, the self, what we call Atman, manifesting in the form of the mind. Guna belongs to the mind. So, how does it help us? If you analyze anything that you love, the first thing that it does is, anything that we love, the first thing that it does is, it brings us happiness. See, if you say you love something, or if you say something is lovable, but if it doesn't bring happiness, there is something seriously wrong with your statement. So, whatever object we love, that will give happiness. That means love is equivalent to happiness. And the quantity of the happiness, or quantum of the happiness, is directly proportional to the amount of love it generates, either in me or in the other object. Directly proportional. Happiness. What is the nature of the self? Happiness. And that's why that the self is the only object in this world which can give, which we can love. So we don't love anything if it doesn't give us happiness. This is the truth. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Or is there any disagreement? If you still say, and I love even though it doesn't give happiness, there are certain conditions, but inside we call it, you know, a sense of fulfillment. I may serve somebody, but that serving or that sacrificing one's own selfish interests produces a tremendous amount of happiness within.
Then what about the case, say, a mother loves a child.
Yes.
But the child has become, taken the wrong way,
yeah,
has become bad. She still loves the child, but she feels a lot of pain from there. So it's not producing happiness.
Our point is, she is not loving the child. She is loving the child for her own sake. That is the first point we made clear.
Mm-hmm.
She is loving the self which is within the child. That is why, whether it is pain or whatever it is. So why does the mother feel the same with other children? If the other children are in the same condition. Suppose, you know, your mother has very good children.
Huh.
Does she love them or not?
Yes.
If the children are bad, does she love them or not?
Yes.
Yes. Supposing the other children are wicked.
Mm.
Will she love them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not her children.
Oh, other's children.
Yeah. Supposing they are very good children, other's children, will she love them?
No. So that's attachment.
That is the point we are telling is, she is seeing her own self in that child. That's why she says, this is my child. This is my country. My means what? She, even though we are using this word, me, I or you, you have to understand, what do you mean by I or you? If you are thinking I means body, body doesn't love anything or anybody. It doesn't know what is called love or hatred or anything. It is only in the mind. If you are talking about the mind is fickle. You can't rely upon it. But a disciplined mind more steadily reflects the light of the self. That is why that mind is capable of sustained love. So this is the second point we have to say. We have to see is, even if we are loving something, we are not loving the body or the nama or rupa, name or form. We are loving the quality that is coming out. Another point we made is, wherever there is love, there is happiness. And this happiness belongs only to the self. How do you may say, what is your proof? Proof is because anything that is changing, changeableness, you have to understand what is called change. So, when there is a beautiful person, after some time, that beauty goes away. So what happened? Beauty has changed into, what does it change into? It's opposite. When light changes, what does it change into? Yes. When love changes, what does it turn into?
Hatred.
That means, if your mind is talking about emotions, then these emotions always change. Their mind is gone, there is nothing called, you know, eternal mind. Mind is not eternal. It is just like any other body. It changes. So the point is, if something is changing, you can't rely upon it. So that is the point. So where from this love comes? Even when we are loving, we can only love something which is eternal. So you love somebody. If that somebody is not changing, then you can love. If the somebody is changing, then... So you also change. If that person is changing, your love also changes automatically. So you cannot rely upon it. But if you are still loving that person, knowing that that person's body and mind is changing, then there must be something other than the body and mind which alone you are capable of loving.
Swami, when you say love the self, means loving the divinity in the child?
Yes. The Atman, Paramatman, what we call. That is what we are talking about. So this is the...
Swamiji, here also, here people say when a child does something wrong, they say it's not the child, it is the behavior that I don't like. I like my child, but I don't like its behavior, his or her behavior.
Exactly what we are talking in different words. I don't like this person's either body or the mind. It is the qualities. Behavior depends upon the quality. Body has nothing to do with it. Quality means gunas. So certain gunas are lovable, certain gunas are not lovable. So when we are talking about loving the gunas, we don't love every guna. only that guna which allows us to love, that guna alone we love. So there is something called, you know, when two ends have to meet, are perfectly fused, then both must be in a condition to be fused.
Yes.
So that means there must be something within me which should not change. There should be something within the object of whatever love I want to direct to, that also must have something which is unchanging. What is the unchanging factor? That is the self. Having cleared these points, there is one point more we have to understand. But
still, one question.
Yeah.
So these gunas we are loving.
Yeah.
I think you said they are coming from the Atman.
Manifestation
of the Atman.
Yeah.
But they can be good or bad.
Yes.
Because we are not.
That is why I qualified only good gunas we can love. Nobody can love bad gunas.
So that means forget about all the gunas.
Yeah.
Just the self. We are only interested in self.
You cannot do that. You will not be able to do that. You can do the work. You can neither serve nor love. But you can continue your duty.
Yeah.
That is not good. We are not talking about that. We are talking about love, nature of love.
Nature of love.
Yeah. So, I will answer now your question. Let us recall the statement that whatever brings us joy, whatever we love, that love must bring happiness to us. Otherwise, you cannot love. So, what is the nature of this happiness? The happiness is within us, but it must be allowed to manifest. And that happiness belongs to whom? To the self. So, how do we experience it? When do we experience it? So, let me give some examples to make this point clear. Many times we discussed in the past, but let us discuss to be able to understand properly. We say, for example, somebody cooks you food. That one day, or one particular occasion, this food is almost perfect. Immediately, it gives you happiness. That means you fall in love. Love and happiness are not two separate things. The moment you love, happiness comes. The moment happiness comes, you love it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So what is the nature of this happiness? What happens when you eat this beautifully prepared food? What happens to you?
Content.
Yes, that is the point. What happens is, this mind, which is agitated, which doesn't allow the light of the self to come out, for this becomes an occasion for that mind, for that time being, as long as we are enjoying it, absolutely it becomes quiet. When the mind becomes quiet, the light of the self as an opportunity to manifest. Is that point clear? Happiness is that state of mind when the mind is in the least state of agitation. The more steady it becomes, the more restful it becomes, the more happiness manifests. If this restfulness is caused by an outside object, or it can be caused by from within ourselves. If it is caused from outside, then also some happiness will come because the mind becomes quiet. You see a beautiful scenery. What happens? Your mind becomes steady. Then you experience tremendous amount of peace and happiness. So where from this peace and happiness is coming? You may see that scene 1,000 times. Suppose you go with a worried mind. So even that scene is incapable of quietening your mind. But there is not too much of worry, normal things. But when you look at the scenery, eat beautiful food, hear beautiful music, or smell some beautiful type of fragrance, whatever, or the temperature is very nice, then immediately the mind becomes quiet. So this is the nature of happiness. Happiness is already within, but we are not allowing it to come out. because that is the nature of the self. The self, as it were, has an opportunity to manifest when the mind, the obstruction of the mind is removed. Just as when the waves subside, the water is absolutely still like a, you know, silver plate, then the reflection becomes perfect. Do you understand that point? This is an important point.
Would the reverse be true also? Would converse be true also?
What do you
mean?
One
is very happy and there will be more love?
Yes, it is not, they are not two separate things following one another. They are things happening simultaneously. If you love, you are happy. If you are happy, you love. Period. So, what are we talking about? Whether it is a person or an object. When that person is very beautiful, let us say, what happens? You know, suppose you see a person like the hunchback of Peter, you know,
Notre Dame.
Immediately, you know, your mind is in a peculiar state. You see a person who is so-called beautiful. Immediately, your mind is attracted. That means it becomes steady. That means the light of the self, I am using the word light of the Atma Jyoti, means happiness. Immediately, it comes forward. That means this mind is not bringing out the light. It's merely, it is allowing that light to manifest. So what is the point we are discussing? Whether this condition of the mind which allows the happiness to express, it could come from within, you know, by practice of japa, meditation, etc. Or it can come from outside objects. Either way, it is this self contacting the self. This is called love. So what are we loving in the, when we say, I love this person? It is really the self, because that person whom you love immediately makes you a happy person. That means your mind becomes quiet and
calm.
One example, you know, a child is frightened and immediately he cries. Then mother immediately rushes and takes in her lap. She embraces. Then what happens? Immediately, I have nothing to fear. My mom is there to protect. The mind becomes
calm.
It is his, until his mind becomes, the child's mind becomes calm, any amount of embrace will not do. So, but the mother's loving behavior immediately quietens that mind. She is not making the child happy. As soon as the mind becomes happy, quiet, fear goes, hesitation goes, it settles down, happiness will come. So what are we talking about? There is only one self. Whether it is, I say, I love for my own sake, not for this body-mind sake, for the happiness. We allow our mind to become quiet. Whether it is from within, generated from within, or it is caused by outside influence, but the process is the same. The mind must become absolutely quiet. Then what then is the difference between loving outside objects and trying to love from within ourselves, bring about this condition from within ourselves? The difference is, if we depend upon any external object, they will change at any time.
Yes.
But that we have to depend. If it is inside, from within ourselves, then there is a greater chance that we are independent. Any time we can bring about that state. What is spiritual life? It is to bring about that state when the mind gradually becomes quieter and still more quiet, until one, at some moment, it ceases to be any obstruction at all. Pure mind and pure self is one and the same. This is the expression of Sri Ramakrishna. So, if we understand this point, then you can see that we can love everything. So that is the next point I am coming to. We don't love anything in this world for the sake of that object, but for the sake of getting that condition of mind which the outside object we expect it to produce within ourselves. If it doesn't produce, we go away. If something makes you unhappy, either physically or mentally, you go far away from that object. Is it not right?
Yes.
If it produces this condition of the mind, we would like to come nearer and nearer and nearer. But as I mentioned, any dependency on the outside object is always, it is in danger of going away.
Yeah.
Because nothing is reliable. But if it is from within ourselves, then it is more reliable. I didn't say absolutely reliable. It is more reliable. So we must go on doing such a thing when we must make it absolutely reliable. What is the only reliable thing within us? It is the only the self. Because even the mind, at some point, it creates problems. Therefore, what is spiritual practice? To make the mind no obstruction. That is why no mind is the best mind.
Nice.
Yes, this is the truth. That is why we get so much of bliss or peace when we are in the state of deep sleep, because the mind practically it has disappeared. This is the truth, if you want to know. So what happens then? This is the next point. The distinction between me and the other disappears. This is called a state of Advaita. So far we are laboring under the delusion. This is myself, this is yourself. What is it that causes this division? Body-mind. This is what body-mind. So that is why we should get out of this body-mind identification. Enduko?
Just pain.
Oh, I see. See, this is what exactly I am talking about. He loved sitting. Until how long? It gave him comfort. Now he loves standing. This is the truth, whatever we do. Stand, sit down. You know, it is not possible always to lie down. Because it makes you intensely uncomfortable, restless you call it. Immediately you have to get up. Then you go run here and there. Gives wonderful happiness. Then you get, that produces unhappiness. Tired means unhappiness. Then you would like to sit. Then that causes unhappiness after some time. Then you go back to the state of lying down. This is the state of our, we are always seeking that state of mind which causes happiness. Whatever causes happiness, we love. So, the statement is, a husband loves the wife, a wife loves the husband, friends love friends, etc., etc., only because we want to get to that state where the happiness is allowed to flow uninterruptedly. This much if we understand, we know. The next statement we have to understand is, this superficially read, he says, oh no, a wife is very selfish. She doesn't care for the husband. All she cares is for her own happiness. The husband is very selfish. All he cares is he doesn't really love the wife. He is only trying to get as much happiness or comfort as he wants from her. It looks like that. It is true in a way, but it is not really true. So what is the teacher trying to tell us? My dear, there is nothing but the self in this whole universe. It is the self which is manifesting as the husband. It is the self which is manifesting as the wife. It is the self which is manifesting as Brahmana, Kshatriya, as money, as material objects, as, you know, these worlds, as gods. Everything is manifestation of the self. What is the teaching? The teaching is, my dear, if you can love anything as the self, then that object will never deceive you, will never cease to give you happiness. You can love it eternally. See what a wonderful teaching. What is he trying to tell in simple words? When a wife wants to love her husband, do not love the husband as a husband. Do not love the husband as self. This is called God. Love him as God. See God in him. Because body will change, mind will change, but the self in him will never change. So you will always love. What is the consequence? The moment you love, your love is uninterrupted. Your happiness also is uninterrupted. But if you love that person for any other reason, that will be conditional love. The moment that condition changes, your love also will stop at the very same moment. What a beautiful teaching he is giving through this simple statement. He is not negative, as I mentioned, and I will mention again and again, Vedic vision doesn't know what is called negativity. They saw everything, the lightning, the thunder, and what we call the summer season and the winter season, as a manifestation of Brahman. That is why he says, Madhuvatharitayate madhuksharante sindhavaha. What does that statement mean? Does not the saint or mystic, does he not feel the heat? No, he feels the heat. He feels the cold. When a mosquito stings him, he feels the mosquito. When a scorpion stings him, he feels the... But what does he say? It is a message from the beloved. What a difference it makes. So that is the teach. That is the goal we have to try. What did Sri Ramakrishna teach? A wife should look upon her husband as manifestation of God. And a husband should look upon his wife as a manifestation of... So having done that, yes, you behave like husband and wife. There is no, there nothing will stop your love. If you put conditions, you must be young, you must be beautiful, you must be able to cook properly and all those things. The condition will change. Because any condition is only a condition. It will change. When it changes, your love also flies. You know, it follows the condition. So that means it also will disappear in that condition. But if you want uninterrupted happiness, then you see the self within everyone. This simple truth, what Lord Swami Vivekananda taught, you know, Murkha Narayana Bhava. Who will love a Murkha? But if you see Narayana in him, Dinana, Daridra Narayana, Rogi Narayana, who loves a Rogi Narayana? Yes? So, see, that is what will happen, you know. You see, for every wife, much of the time, or at least some of the time, the husband is a murkha. Yeah, they say, you know, these husbands, you know, not very intelligent people. Everything has to be repeated to them. So the wife was telling, these are all dumb. So everything has to be repeated to you. The husband got so angry and said, what did you say? So Yajnavalka, so the Vedic vision, they will teach the highest truth. What did Sri Ramakrishna teach? It is exactly the same thing. He was the Yajnavalkya. What did he teach to Holy Mother? He said, Uncle Moon is moon for everybody. So everybody is God. That is why, how did Holy Mother put that practice into it? You know, what is the problem? We put conditions. So what are those conditions? These conditions are called faultlessness. If you are faultless, I will love you. If you have faults, I will not love you. What was Holy Mother's teaching?
Do not see faults in
others. It is, she never said that the faults will get be gotten rid of. Everybody will have their own faults. You see, this is the problem. That is why sometimes disciples are advised that they shouldn't stay with their guru for a long time. They start, you know, picking the, all the faults. And all their devotion will be lost. That guru is the greatest. Attaleni kodalu tamuralu. Kodaleni atta gunavanturalu. Atta means mother-in-law. Kodala means daughter-in-law. A daughter-in-law who has no mother-in-law is the best daughter-in-law. And a mother-in-law who has no daughter-in-law is a saint.
Yeah, that's very common.
So, you know, when the guru dies, what a devotion. You know, our tendency is to find faults in anything. It's human tendency. But spiritual sadhana means slowly, slowly, to accept and say everybody will have good. So see good the good qualities. Only try to see them. In course of time it becomes a habit. Then there would be no problem. This is called spiritual practice. A saint is not a saint because the whole world has become wonderful world. A saint is a saint because he sees only the good. There was a drawing teacher in a school. He was always positive. So this drawing school teacher, one day he gave assignment and he will praise, you know, anybody drawing at least some part better way, he would be positive. He went to one student, there was nothing positive. But it was his habit to be positive. So he said, the pencil you have is very beautiful. That is what a saint is. He sees bindu te shindhu deka. In one drop, he will see an ocean. That is why he became, because he always sees some good quality. And it is true, in everybody, there is some good quality. Not quality, good qualities. If anybody says, I don't believe in it, then that person is the worst person in the whole universe. Means most unhappy person in the whole universe. So spiritual practice here is the secret of the spiritual practice. We try to develop good qualities. What do we see in the outside world? Whatever qualities we have in our mind, that only we see in the outside. This is the truth. If we are not thieves, we can't see thief outside. If we don't know what is called a thief, we will never know who is a thief outside. Is it not a fact? So when a saint develops such beautiful qualities, it means all positive qualities, what do you think he sees in the outside world? Only positive qualities. He sees only, in other words, the manifestation of God. So there he might see, definitely he will see, everybody is not having good qualities. Some people will have good qualities in more, some people will have less, some good people also will have some bad qualities. But he has to take note, he is not blind. What does he say? This is Leela. God only is manifesting in that form. A sting is a sting. But he doesn't say it is a scorpion sting. He says, this is a God's Leela. That is the idea here. The idea is that we all want to love because it is the nature of the self to love. We all want to be happy, you know, this is the way. Is there any controversy there? Believer, non-believer, one thing is there. Everybody wants happiness. And happiness means what? Love. So we all want to love. We all want happiness. Means we all want love. How is it possible to love all the time, everywhere? Only to see the self. There is no other way. If you don't see the self, you cannot love. If you can't love, you can't be happy. Simple truth. So having said this first part, then he is telling, O Maitreyi, this is the goal. We haven't reached that goal. We are far away from that goal. You have to start the journey. How does the journey? First thing he says, Atmava are drashtavyaha. My dear, this Atman is to be realized. So how does one realize the Atman? How does, that means, you see, the point here is, there is only one self. Therefore, whether you realize yourself or whether you realize the other self, it doesn't make any difference. As soon as you realize yourself, you only see everything as your own self. That is the goal. How does it go? Then, Shrotavyaha, Mantavyaha, Nididhyasitavyaha. Hear about it. Then, go on thinking until you are convinced 100% that is the truth. And then, make that truth your own. You become one with that truth. That is what he is telling. Nididhyasana means to make it one. So, now shall we go there and see?
What does Nididhyasana means?
I will come to that point very shortly. Atma va are drashtavyaha. Atma must be realized, my dear. How does it happen? First he told the goal, tattva. Then he must tell the purushartha. This is your only goal in life, to realize. Shrotavyaha, you must go on hearing. Mantavyaha, you must go on reflecting upon it, thinking upon it all the time. Nididhyasitavyo maitreyi, you must do. Atmanah va are darshanena shravanena matya vijnanena idam sarvam idita. When you have realized this self, through hearing, through reflection and through complete upasana or meditation, then whatever truth I am trying to teach you, only then you will understand it 100%. So now, what is the process, Vedantic process? Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. So, Shravana means to hear. What is it that is to be heard? Atma alone should be heard. That means, in simple words, you talk about God. Brahmavadin, we said. Who is a Brahmavadin? One who thinks about Brahman, talks about, because if you think something else, then you cannot go on talking about accepting that thing. You see, Ramakrishna tells you, no? If you have eaten garlic, yeah, then you belch, what smell comes out? Yeah. But if you are constantly thinking about God, unconsciously also, only the talk or the thought expresses what is speech, expression of the thought. Loud thinking is called. There is a beautiful story. There was a king and queen. And the queen was very religious. Every occasion, no occasion, she will make a festival, worship God, feed other people. But the husband never talks God, doesn't listen to about God. So she was praying to God, please make my husband also a devotee of yours. One night when they were sleeping, she woke up in the middle of the night, and she was hearing, her husband was muttering. Then she put her ear there. Rama, 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 constantly, whole night. He was muttering. She was so happy. Oh, my husband is a Gupta Bhakta. He doesn't want to express that. He never told anything about how devoted he was, because who can utter whole night Ramnama? Only a devotee. So she was so happy, jumped out of her bed, called the Prime Minister that tomorrow be a wonderful festival, but I did not know till now that my husband was such a great devotee of God. The king got up, saw the whole face of the city has changed. Everywhere festive atmosphere was there, and everybody was waiting for his darshana. Then he was surprised. So, what is all this about? Then she told, I did not know that you are such a devotee. He said, how did you come to know? He said, yesterday whole night you were murmuring Rama's name only. He became so shocked. Immediately he took out his knife and cut his throat, saying, how could I be so to express my inner love for God so like a shameless, you know, woman? How could I expose my love? It's a story to indicate there are people who don't want to exhibit their devotion outside. Those who have inside, they don't want to exhibit. Those who don't have anything, they want to exhibit. This is the truth, because we all want recognition and all those things. Anyway, so Shravana. What is Shravana? Only hear about God, think about God, and do everything about God. That is what we have been talking in the Bhagavad Gita. What were we talking in the morning? That if you cannot think about me, then try to do all actions connected with me. Or if you can't do that also, you give up the fruits of actions. But ultimately, no, chitta samadhana. The buddhi and the mind. Mai eva mana adhatsva. Mai buddhim niveshaya. Ata urdhvam nivasishyasi mai eva na samshayaha. Thereafter you will only live in me. When did we discuss it? What a wonderful memory. You know, Shakespeare wrote his works. They are called Shakespeare's works. Who wrote Shakespeare's works? I don't know, sir. You see? So, that is what he said. Only hear about. But to hear, what does it mean to hear? To hear means that the person is in his third state of jignasu. He is prepared. He has shama, dhamma. You know what is called sadhana chatushtraya sampatti is there. What is the first one? Viveka, discrimination, dispassion, control over body and mind, and intense yearning for self-realization. He is already acquired. But having acquired, then the next step is to hear. But it doesn't mean, Swamiji, what is the point attending your class? I don't have even the first qualification. No. Is go simultaneously, you hear, then you develop a little dispassion, a little discrimination, and then slowly, we will also attain one blessed moment, that real intense yearning will push. The moment it comes, our work is done. Shrotavya. Then, what we heard, we must think deeply. Why? Because doubts will come, now and then. Is the saddle also included in the horse? Doubts will come. It's natural. Until all the doubts are completely removed, how? Through this, what is called, there is a way of Vedic studies. They call it, there are six, conditions have to be applied for the study of scriptures. First of all, say, where is it occurring? Secondly, what came before? And then what came later on? Thirdly, is it said anywhere else or only here? So these conditions are there. Only then the what we study gets fixed in our mind. Anyway, we don't need to go into those details. But the point is, we must be eager to hear. Why was Ramakrishna saying to some people, go and see the buildings? Don't they have ears to hear? Why was Christ telling, those who have ears, they will hear. Those who have eyes, they will see. Why was he telling? The people who came to him, don't they have eyes or ears? Yes, they have. But if there is no interest, then eyes will not see and ears also will not hear. Means if we are not interested, our hearing and seeing is proportionate to our interest in any particular subject. This is the truth. Shrotavya, then mantavya. A point will come when we are absolutely convinced, there is not the least doubt that this is the truth, this is the goal, and I have to, then intense yearning will come. At that point, you go on meditating until all the unconscious habits have been destroyed. So then you see, if a person is convinced, why does he need to practice sadhana? Because when a person is convinced of the truth, what happens is, he will never again do what is against that conviction. But what he had already done in the past, those past habits like ghosts, they will haunt us. That is the obstruction. Until they also have been, this is called vasanakshaya, destruction of the vasanas. As Shankaracharya tells in the Viveka Chudamani, that even a person of knowledge should strive until his old habits are erased. You are not creating any new fire. There is no new, you just installed this malware remover. So it doesn't allow any new malware to come. But there are already some malwares there sitting. They have got to be removed. That's what he did yesterday, you know. Now he says, you have no fear. But before he said you have no fear, he had to remove the old malware. Right? Mind is exactly like this. It's not different. Vasanakshaya. That vasanakshaya is achieved by nidhityasana. When all these vasanas are removed, what happens is, the so-called mind becomes so pure, there is only the reflection, perfect reflection of the Atman. So that is called Brahma Akara Vritti. Only Brahman. Or Jagan Mata Akara Vritti, Rama Akara Vritti, Krishna Akara Vritti. When a person attains to that state of Brahma Akara Vritti, that is called Brahmaloka. If it is, his mind is filled with thought of Vishnu, it is called Vaikuntha. If it is filled with Shiva, it is called Kailasa. Or if it is filled with Krishna, it is called Goloka. This is the state. So, there is a law, psychological law. One thought without companions will pine away and die. Solitary, it cannot bear solitary confinement. So, very shortly, it will give up its ghost. And then, there is no obstruction. Then, like pure water poured into pure water, like pure oil poured into pure oil, you become completely one. This is what Upanishads tell us. So, the essence of what we discussed is that the only thing that we can love is the Self. Whether we claim to love it in the other object or in the other person or within ourselves, it is only the Self. There is only one Self. Nobody can love anything other than the Self, because all happiness is within the Self. And so, whatever we get happiness, that becomes the most lovable object. And so therefore, the most lovable object in this world, in this universe, is only the Self. Therefore, if you want to have uninterrupted happiness, you should be able to see uninterruptedly the Self, both within yourself and within? Outside, without, within and without. So, it, in the beginning it appeared as a negative statement, selfish statement, the wife only loves for her own sake, the husband only loves for his own sake. That is only to indicate, to lead us to this conclusion, that there is nothing that cannot be loved. Everything can be loved because everything is only the self. But even if there is body and mind, we should know that is also a manifestation of the self only. Really, it is the self that loves the self, and there are no two selves. There is only one self ultimately. That is the final realization he wants to tell. After that, you will love everything. You will get uninterrupted happiness all the time, everywhere, because the self has no condition. How many conditions are there? The conditions, according to philosophy, are three. Desha, Kala, Nimitta. Time, space, causation. These three conditions are destroyed, then there is no space. That means you are infinite. There is no time. That means you are eternal. There is no cause. Therefore, there is no other. If there is no cause, there is no effect. That means what remains is only one. This is the most marvelous teaching, which he puts it in a positive language in the next verse. We will discuss it tomorrow. And then the rest of the verses are just to say what gives you authority to say that this whole universe is the self. So that statement, we come from Brahman, we live in Brahman, and we merge back in Brahman. This to give, he gives three examples. And in the end he says, just as a grain of salt. Where from the salt has come? From the sea. And that grain of salt, when you put it back in the sea, will it not become perfectly one with it? Just so, this universe is nothing but a manifestation of the self. When you realize the self, your so-called individuality gets destroyed, so it doesn't go anywhere. Not that you have ever been to. It's all the delusion or illusion of separation or individuality is within yourself. Just as the space within a pot, when the pot is broken, becomes merged in the Mahakasha. Ghatakasha merges in the Mahakasha. Ghatodaka merges in the Mahodaka, that means the water in the pot becomes merged in the water of this. So, my dear, this is what happens. Your individual self will destroy it, self-destruct. So, it is not that the self is destructed. The notion of individuality gets destroyed. Then the self and the self, there is no such difference. There is only one self. That is the teaching which he gives. But this is the main point, and we will also discuss those things quickly tomorrow and also after tomorrow. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat. Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.